And indeed, once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, broadcasting in Olympia, Washington on 91.3 FM, in Seattle at 87.9 FM, and in Point Arena, California at 87.9 FM. Also online, www.freakradio.org. My name's the V-Man, and today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll be discussing the widening civil war in the South American country of Colombia. Joining me on the phone is Bert Ruiz, author of The Colombian Civil War. Also on the line with us is Tom Burke, a writer for Fight Back newspaper and an organizer with the Colombia Solidarity Committee in Chicago. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat coming up straight ahead here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Long before U.S. politicians declared a war on drugs, there was a civil war raging in Colombia. If recent news reports are any indication, that civil war shows no sign of abatement. The U.S. government has been partnering with the Colombian government for the last 25 years, allegedly to wipe out illicit drug production. In July of 2000, Congress passed and former President Bill Clinton signed a bill giving Colombia $1.6 billion in military aid. A variety of helicopters and other weapons were delivered, and Colombian Army personnel were to be trained in the United States. In January 2001, we learned that more than 65,000 acres out of an estimated 300,000 acres in Colombia dedicated to growing coca crops had been sprayed with glyphosate products manufactured by Monsanto. Six planes used in those fumigations have been shot down so far this year by rebel groups in Colombia, the latest on September 21st. A week later, on September 29th, 11 people were killed and more than 40 others wounded when a remote-controlled bomb was detonated on a crowded street in the southern Colombian town of Florencia. 16 candidates have been killed in the run-up to state and municipal elections being held October 26th in Colombia. Following the latest violence, Colombia's President Alvaro Uribe made a hastily scheduled visit to the U.S. for high-level talks about opening a free trade agreement between his country and the U.S. Colombia's history with protecting workers' rights is equally abhorrent. More trade unionists are killed in Colombia than in all other countries combined, with near-total impunity. For example, union workers who bottle Coca-Cola products have been kidnapped, tortured, and murdered. The largest Coca-Cola union in Colombia has asked for an international campaign against Coke to stop the violence against workers, which has included a half a dozen murders at one plant alone in the mid-1990s. Reports of these crimes sparked a historic lawsuit against the Coca-Cola company and their Colombian bottler by the International Labor Rights Fund and the U.S. Steel and the United Steelworkers of America on behalf of the Colombian union. In early September of this year, Coca-Cola announced that it will be closing 9 of their 16 bottling plants in Colombia. The managers have halted production and are pressuring workers to resign from their contracts in exchange for a lump sum payment, voluntary retirement. The workers have been told that if they don't resign, they will be dismissed. 2,500 workers are now at risk of losing their jobs. With this backdrop, we'll talk about the current situation in Colombia today on Rockin' the Boat. With us from New York is Bert Ruiz. He is the author of The Colombian Civil War and a former Wall Street executive with business dealings in Colombia. Also on the line is Tom Burke. He writes for the Fight Back newspaper and is an organizer with the Colombia Solidarity Committee in Chicago, and he is spearheading a worldwide day of action on October 16th to boycott Coca-Cola's products. I want to welcome you both to Rockin' the Boat.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vinny.
Why don't we begin with you, Bert Ruiz. In your book, The Colombian Civil War, you spoke with all of the key players in this conflict, including DEA agents, guerrilla fighters, and even Andres Pastrana, the former president of Colombia. Can you kind of give us just a brief description to the roots of the conflict and the civil war in Colombia and identify who some of the key players are? Because I think people often hear about the FARC and the ELN and get maybe a little mixed up about who is who on this conflict.
Well, the violent actors in Colombia are, among the guerrillas is two dominant guerrilla groups, the FARC and the ELN. The other, they are revolutionary guerrilla groups that have been fighting the government for nearly 40 years. The other violent actor, the paramilitary group called the AUC, all three of these actors have been condemned by the U.S. State Department and labeled as terrorist groups. The other fundamentals in Colombia, of course, is, you know, the government, the armed forces does have links with the paramilitary actors, and this is one of the problems that has been haunting Colombia. You know, on the international level, Colombia is somewhat isolated. Without the United States, they would be all alone. Europe has turned their back on them. Asia has turned their back on them. And it's really the United States and the war on drugs that is fueling this crisis.
You brought in the idea that this is, you know, a fight against terrorism. That's been the rhetoric we've been hearing for the last couple of years in this country. Is it really a fight against terrorism, though? I mean,
It's a great question.
Aren't these groups just to be viewed as sort of, you know, I mean, like freedom fighters in a struggle for national liberation?
Well, it's a brutal civil war. But if one, and I really applaud your question, because if one were to look at the history of this conflict, you would find that the real terrorists really are the government. In 1948, a legendary populist called Gaitan was killed. Shortly afterwards, there was a counter-revolution where the government employed the police and the army to terrorize the people in the rural communities. What took place was the people got together, formed these groups to defend themselves, and they stayed there. And it's a part of Colombia's long history with violence. The government is not trusted.
You've traveled to the region a number of times to write your book. Can you give us a sketch of how this conflict has affected the civilian population in these rural areas?
Well, for the most part, Colombia is a fragmented country. You have really two nations. You have the country that resides in the cities and the people that reside in the rural areas, so El Campo. And they really have two priorities. Unfortunately, the people in the city applaud the heavy-handed work of the current president, Álvaro Uribe. They care very little for NGOs and human rights. That's not a priority to them. You know, of course, it's a blanket statement, but Álvaro Uribe, the existing president of Colombia, is really enjoying very good polling numbers. Whether you look at Yankovic or the Gallup, his numbers are somewhere between 70 to 60% favorable. So the people like what he's doing, and what he's doing is really a very hard hand. But in regard to the people in the countryside, they don't enjoy a lot of the benefits that the state offers. Certainly, they don't enjoy any protection from the state. They're very vulnerable to the violent actors, and they're caught in between. There's many honest civilians in the countryside that are flocking to the city for fear of being killed from the violent actors.
Let's bring in Tom Burke. He is with the Fight Back newspaper and an organizer in Chicago with the Columbia Solidarity Committee. Hi, Tom.
Hi there.
Maybe you can kind of go off of this notion that we've been talking about with Bert Ruiz and tell us a little bit of your view on how this conflict affects the economy there on the ground. And I guess the question I'm asking is, do you think that, or would you characterize Colombia as having a cocaine economy?
Well, I wanted to comment one thing about what Bert was saying with the statistics that are used for opinion polls. I think generally the opinion polls in Colombia are very distorted, because the way they do it is they call people on the telephone and, you know, on line phones, not on cell phones either. And most of the poor peasants, for instance, would not have phones of any sort. So when they do these opinion polls, they're distorted towards, you know, they're interviewing middle-class people. Maybe some of the working-class people in Colombia get interviewed, but you know, you're talking a country with 2 to 3 million displaced people who are living in shanty towns and, you know, makeshift tent cities. that, you know, they're not being interviewed about their opinions of what's happening in society. So I would actually say the urban opinion is much more, you know, difficult to determine than what the newspapers in Colombia or the television portray the statistics as. And I don't think the strength of Uribe as a president is what's reflected by the media, because the media are owned by the rich and by the corporations.
Well, that's a valid point, that random digit dialing polling by telephone is how they quantify support. And there is no such thing as grassroots door-to-door canvassing. It's entirely too dangerous and too expensive. Moreover, statistically, 55% of the nation doesn't have a phone, so
yeah,
they're the silent majority. So, no, that's a valid point, Tom. Oh. You know, but I was just using the number that the international press uses.
Okay. I don't trust the international press either, so but I think we're on the same page.
Yes, sir. To
the economy question, I think, you know, you have a basic situation where Colombia's economy has been developed in the interest of the few. That you have, you know, a wealthy elite, and then you have U.S. corporations and the wealthy elite in the U.S. who are the main benefactors of the system that's called the economy for Colombia. Now, the main reason the U.S. is intervening in Colombia is because of oil. The oil industry is what they want to get their hands on, and they're supporting Uribe and trying to privatize the very large oil corporation that's run by the government called Ecopetrol. And if they can privatize this, it'll go right into the hands of U.S. and British oil companies, and their profits will go through the roof. So the U.S. government spent $98 million recently just to protect the oil lines of U.S. companies, for instance, with U.S. military aid. So it's very direct welfare for corporate profit in that situation. And in terms of the drug economy, I think the U.S. interest there, you know, if the U.S. wanted to do a war on drugs, they would go to Wall Street. That's where they would find the source of the problem, because it's a $5 billion industry, I believe, in the U.S., and the bankers and the wealthy people have a stake in this drug economy that exists in the United States. So I think the problem the U.S. faces in Colombia is not so much the growth of coca as much as the U.S. would like to control the economy so that, it's not something that's outside of the economic structure that the U.S. controls.
Bert Ruiz, you're a former Wall Street executive, and you've had business dealings in Colombia. Do you agree with the contention that the drug problem begins on Wall Street?
Well, not exactly. I think it's a little far-fetched. I think that Tom has made some good points. However, Ecopetrol, I worked with them. I was an advisor for Ecopetrol for a number of years, and I have heard the talk of the privatization of Ecopetrol, but I can only tell you the fact that the last Minister of Mines and Energy who attempted to even mention the possibility of privatizing the Ecopetrol was practically impeached in Congress. I think that's the family jewel for Colombia, and I think they don't want it in the hands of the Americans. Another thing about Colombia's oil, not that I'm an authority, but I have worked in the region for quite a long time, and in a few years, if they don't find new oil, they will no longer be self-sufficient. Having said that, there are geographical findings or indications that there's a lot of oil in Colombia, particularly in Arauca, and that there's vast reserves that have yet to be tapped. So I think the majors are all interested in exploring the fields in Colombia, but of course with this war going on, it's entirely too dangerous. And yes, the Bush administration did dedicate $98 million to securitize the pipeline, but it was a drop in a bucket. It's hardly going to help matters. So in regard to Ecopetrol, there's different schools of thought. Some people think they'll privatize. I personally think it will never happen. And in regard to the economy, the facts are that the Colombia is not diversified. Coffee is still a very large sector of their economy. Every housewife knows who Juan Valdez is. And right now, the coffee market is in a vicious, vicious bear market. And the cost of coffee is under the cost of production. So the Colombian coffee growers are suffering dramatically. So that's one of the things that's really driving the market. The Colombian economy is in a recession. And if it wasn't for Argentina, it would have the highest unemployment in all of Latin America. So, I mean, the drug issue is a big issue, but I don't think the drug is such a large economic factor as others have said. We've studied it, and, you know, I've looked at the central bank data. Drugs does not fuel the Colombian economy. What drugs does fuel is the violence in Colombia.
Mm-hmm. You're tuned into Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. My name's the V-Man. And joining me by telephone, you just heard the voice of Bert Ruiz. He's the author of The Colombian Civil War and a former Wall Street executive with business dealings in Colombia. Also on the line is Tom Burke. He writes for the Fight Back newspaper and is an organizer in Chicago with the Colombia Solidarity Committee. We have about 15 minutes left, and I want to move back to Tom Burke and hear a little bit more about your thoughts on this, these talks with Uribe, who was just in the U.S. on October 1st in the hopes of securing future dealings with the U.S. on a free trade agreement. What are your thoughts about this, and what will that do to the economy there in Colombia that we're talking about and the war that's going on?
Well, it's like Bert said, that Uribe is very isolated in the world, you know. His big supporters are the White House and Bush, and the problem he faces now is he, a few months ago, tried to cut his own deal on the free trade of the Americas agreement, and, you know, Bush wouldn't even speak to him about it, and, you know, now the big meeting of trade ministers will be happening in Miami in late November, and he'll have to try and play his cards there, but he's very isolated. It's a bad situation when a president of a country is going to the president of the U.S. to beg and can't even get the door opened, you know. In terms of his latest moves in the economy, Uribe had the military take over the largest oil refinery of Ecopetrol back in late June, early July. And the military occupied the refinery in Barranca Bermeja for 3 weeks. This is a refinery that I visited. And as Bert also said, it's very difficult for the president of Colombia to privatize this oil company and the industry in general. But what they've done is, you know, they're privatizing at the end of a gun now. And they already have the plan in place, and they've begun a small step that they began was to take future reserves of the oil industry, and those are now sold to private corporations so that any future oil finds will not go to the benefit of the national oil industry and to Ecopetrol in particular. They'll go to other corporations like British Petroleum or Occidental, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, like you said about coffee, because of the way the markets worked, it's like Mexico importing corn these days, that Colombia is actually a net importer of coffee. So it the economy is really in shambles. The war obviously adds to this situation. You have, you know, like I said, 2 to 3 million people displaced. You know, their economic situation is dire. You know, this is a country that's heading either towards a greater war with U.S. intervention or towards a revolution. That's where it's heading.
What about the treatment of workers in Colombia? I mentioned in the introduction that Colombia has, you know, the highest level of labor unionists being killed every year. And you're spearheading this boycott Coca-Cola campaign for October 16th. Tell us a little bit about the treatment of workers and how this campaign came about.
Well, we started doing solidarity work with Colombia about 4 years ago. And we were looking at different things to try and bring the issue of Colombia and the reality of Colombia to the American public, to try and make campaigns of solidarity so we can bring peace with justice, so we can make changes, and we can stop the killing by paramilitary groups of the trade union leaders. Right now, for the last 6 years, it's averaged 3 trade unionists a week. You know, Colombia is a country where more teachers get killed than any other type of worker. So there's definitely a problem in terms of human rights and trade union rights. So the thing we decided to do was to take up the appeal of a union called Sinaltrinal, which is the Coca-Cola Workers Union. It's a food and beverage workers union. And at Coca-Cola, you now have 9 trade unionists who have been murdered. And this began back in the 90s, but it really pivots around December 5th, 1996, when Isidro Hill, the lead negotiator for the union, was murdered. That same day, Luis Adolfo Cardona was kidnapped, but he escaped from the paramilitaries. The paramilitaries then went and looted the union hall and burned it to the ground. And then management followed this up within a day with union resignation letters. So all the workers were forced to resign from the union under the threat of death. So we've taken up this campaign, and the AFL-CIO brought Luis Adolfo Cardona to the United States as part of their Solidarity Center's program, which gives training and education and exchange with Colombian trade unionists. So far, I think 29 Colombian trade unionists have gone through the program in Washington, D.C., and many of them tour the U.S. and speak about the conditions of their work, which includes death and includes kidnapping and includes threats against them. So with Luis Adolfo Cardona, we've been able to get an extended stay for him, and we've applied for political asylum for him and his family, his wife and daughter, we were also allowed to bring to the U.S. So with the campaign against Coca-Cola, he's speaking on campuses and at union halls and churches across the U.S., and we have a website, which is ColumbiaActionNetwork.org, that features this campaign. So we're boycotting Coca-Cola until there's a change in their relationship with the union in Colombia.
What more can you tell us about the lawsuit that was filed by a coalition of international with the International Labor Rights Fund and the United Steelworkers of America?
Right. A very good lawyer named Dan Kovalik from the United Steelworkers of America brought a lawsuit using the Alien Torts Act, which is a law from the late 1700s. But he's used it in a new way to try and hold Coca-Cola as a corporation in the U.S. responsible for what it's done to workers in Colombia. The lawsuit has faced some difficulties in that a federal judge ruled that the Atlanta company is not really connected the way the lawsuit was claiming. But the lawsuit is still going through, and the Atlanta Corporation still was the biggest shareholder of the Latin American company that hired the bottlers in Colombia. So we assert that there still is a connection, that Coca-Cola in Atlanta has a responsibility to people here, as well as to Colombian workers, to defend their rights to their life and to their safety and to their happiness in the workplace, you know?
That was the voice of Tom Burke, a writer for the Fight Back newspaper, organizer with the Colombia Solidarity Committee. And you can find more about the Boycott Coca-Cola campaign at ColumbiaActionNetwork.org. Also on the line, we have Bert Ruiz, author of The Colombian Civil War. Bert Ruiz, I want to ask you one final question. As we've been talking about earlier, Colombia's government is the third largest recipient of U.S. aid, over $1.6 billion with Plan Colombia. What would that look like if the U.S. decided to stop funding the death squads there? I mean, we know that we've been talking about some of the death squads there, the paramilitaries. They're linked with the U.S., and there's a mountain of evidence linking, you know.
Yes, we're not directly funding the death squads. The State Department's not cutting a check to the death squad. what we are doing.
It's sort of a wink and a nod.
Well,
alliance, though.
I wouldn't go as far as to say that we are providing weapons and support to the Colombian Armed Forces. There are definite links within the Colombian Armed Forces to these paramilitary groups. President Uribe has tried to create a peace agreement with these paramilitary groups, and to the credit of 57 members of Congress who wrote a letter to Uribe demanding that he break the ties with the paramilitaries. There are ties. It's been improving, and it's a major issue. But to answer your question, if we were to pull the plug on Colombia, then what Tom said earlier is absolutely valid. You're talking about a revolution. You're talking about that nation actually going down the drain.
You're a Vietnam veteran, right,
yes,
Bert
sir.
Ruiz? And would you, it's been said that Colombia is the next Vietnam. Would you agree with that characterization?
Before 9/11, I'd say yes. We have a lot of other priorities. I think that Iraq, Afghanistan, North Korea are larger priorities to the United States. Another thing is we really don't want to go into Colombia. There are too many members of Congress that are well aware that the FARC and the ELN, the guerrillas that are fighting the government, these are not farmers with pitchforks. These are hardened second-generation fighters that oftentimes can beat the crap out of the Colombian Armed Forces. It would not be a very easy walk in the park.
In 1 minute, what would you say is the solution to the problem then? How do we get peace?
The solution is conflict resolution, to continue the path to conflict resolution. It's the only way to get out of that mess. Colombia has to implement land reforms. Colombia has to implement social reforms. Colombia has to sanitize its armed forces. And until it does that, it's always going to live in violence.
All right. Well, Bert Ruiz, thanks for being with us. And if you want to stay on the line for the last comments we'll get from Tom Burke, I'm going to pose the same question to you. What do you think is going to be bring about a peaceful resolution to the situation there in Colombia?
I don't think the United States will allow, a peaceful change in Colombia. And I don't think the U.S. Seeks social justice for the large population of people in Colombia, 43 to 46 million people. And those people are rebelling and resisting. And, they oppose plans like Plan Colombia, which, just to say to date, has spent $2.4 billion, according to The Economist magazine. And, the left movement in Colombia, the social justice movement, tried an electoral path in the 80s to social change, and they formed the Patriotic Union political party, and 4,000 to 5,000 of their members were killed, including presidential and vice presidential candidates, by death squads. So I don't think people in Colombia are of the mind that they can elect change, though I'm not arguing everyone opposes that idea. But their experience has shown that elections are not allowed to be carried through in a democratic fashion. So I think the U.S. eventually will intervene more and more. I think we will be at war there. And I think, as Bert said, the FARC and the ELN have been fighting for 40 years and 30 years, respectively. And they're tough customers, as Rumsfeld would say. They're not going to be defeated. And the U.S. will either be in a very long war, or the guerrilla movement will organize and win.
Well, we're going to have to end it right there. We're out of time. I've been speaking tonight with Bert Ruiz, the author of The Colombian Civil War, a former Wall Street executive with business dealings in Colombia. You can find out more about him and his book at his website, www.bertruiz.com. That's BERTRUIZ.com. Also on the line was Tom Burke, a writer for Fight Back newspaper and organizer with the Colombia Solidarity Committee in Chicago. The Boycott Coca-Cola campaign day of action is October 16th. For more information, ColombiaActionNetwork.org. Thank you both for being with us on Rockin' the Boat.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is going to wrap it up for me tonight here on Rockin' the Boat. Join me again tomorrow from 5:30 to 6 o'clock. I'll be back in the studio for more here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org.
Cooking to Colombia, seeking lower wages. They got just what they came for, but as we turn the pages, we find the workers do not like the sound of their children's hungry cries. So they said, we'll join the union. They began to organize. So Coke called up a terrorist group called the AUC. Said, we've got some problems at the factory. The AUC went to the plant, killed two union men, told the rest, you leave the union or we'll be back again. Well, Coke did not complain about this dirty deed. Why give workers higher wages when Coke is all they really need? They phoned the AUC, said, thanks, without you we'd go broke. And to show our appreciation, here's 100 cases of Coke. The baby drinks it in his bottle when the water ain't no good. The dog drinks it, but he don't know if he should. Some folks say it's the nectar of the gods, but Coke is the drink of the death squads. Coke is the drink of the death squads. Well, these workers wouldn't take this situation lying down. Some went up to Georgia, said, look what's happened to our town. You American workers get downsized, as for us we just get shot. And those of us who live, our teeth begin to rot. Cause the baby drinks it in his bottle and the water ain't no good. The dog drinks it, but he don't know if he should. Some folks say it's the nectar of the gods, but Coke is the drink of the death squads. Coke is the drink of the death squads. Well, now that's the situation, what are you gonna do? Cause the death squads run Colombia and they're paid by me and you. We can let Coke rule the world, see what future that will bring. Or we can drink juice and smash the state, now that's the real thing. Cause the baby drinks it in his bottle when the water ain't no good. The dog drinks it, but he don't know if he should. Some folks say it's the nectar of the gods, but Coke is the drink of the death squads. Coke is the drink of the death squads.